The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The French election results are coming, and we have a big week for earnings on tap. Oil plunges below $50 per barrel. And we have our guest today, Damien Lupo from Total Control Financial. All this and much more on episode number 506 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Good day to you. Good Sunday. It is April 23rd, 2017. I'm Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged. Hopefully you've had the opportunity to listen to that. Myself and John C. Dvorak talk pretty much every Tuesday evening at 9 o'clock. Actually, we're going to be skipping this week. But every week, Tuesdays, you can check in with us and listen live, or just go over to your favorite podcast directory and grab that. It's kind of a fun show if you haven't listened to it. But we do have a lot of things to talk about today before we get to our guest. And I guess I had the opportunity just yesterday over at one of my favorite places to hang out. It was a crawfish boil. It's that time of year again for crawfish, and my buddy does a great job. He brings them in from Louisiana. And as I was sitting there and enjoying my crawfish, I happened to start talking to a friend of mine from the area, and we started talking about a variety of things, and he started to talk about finance with me. He's a doctor, and he does very well for himself. And we started talking about just different financial matters and markets and things like that. And then he started to say to me this whole idea that he says, why is it so difficult, the area of finance? You know, it's kind of easy, he says. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, I don't understand why people just don't understand it and just basically put their money into investments. And what do they need this? What do we need that for? Why do they need an advisor? Why don't they just put their money in some good stocks and be done with it? I said, well, that can work. I have no problem with that. Fact is that if you have some really good quality and do your research and you find those names that are out there that are either going to be long-term good, let's say, dividend payers or possibly growth candidates, I could see that working. And he goes on to tell me and go on. And I said, but you know, there are times that there are people who they just don't understand about their money. They don't understand about the taxes. They don't understand about the investments. They don't understand how to do the research. And he said, why is that? I don't understand that. I said, well, because some people do what they do and some people don't have an ability or desire or have the time to do the research. They don't have the want to do it. He says, I don't understand. I said, well, let me try to explain this to you. You do your job really well, and maybe you don't have time to do things like the research that you have to do to find the stocks or mutual funds or ETFs or whatever it is that you're trying to do. He said, well, I don't understand. It seems pretty easy. He said, I think I'm pretty good at it. I said, okay, well, then maybe you don't need somebody. That's not a problem. But there's a lot of people out there that really rely on an advisor in some capacity to help them. And I wasn't trying to just necessarily defend what I do, but I was trying to just go along and understand what he was attempting to bring to the table here. And he went on and on telling me about this and not giving up on the idea that he just doesn't understand. Well, somewhere in the conversation, he started telling me about how he bought this property down in the Keys and how that property had done very well for him. I said, well, that's good. He says, you know, but I made a big mistake. I said, well, what'd you do? He says, well, back in like 2006, 7, when I sold off all these assets that I had inside of my stock portfolios and bought this property, because he bought it outright, I didn't realize that I'd have to pay taxes on all those sales. And I got whacked at the next year when my taxes came in because I didn't realize that I'm going to have to pay capital gains on all this stuff. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. We just had this discussion where you're basically telling me and not backing down that, well, there's no reason to have an advisor of any sort. And, you know, of course, it's good to have an accountant, an attorney, and but what do you need an investment advisor for in your circumstance? And meanwhile, here you are paying a load of taxes because one of the basic principles of investing is understanding the cost basis on your investments. And you paid a load of taxes and you didn't know about it. And then you got caught and you had all sorts of problems because you had these taxes due that you weren't unaware of. And it took down your investment portfolio. I got to tell you, I just stood there. I was stunned. I really was. I was just looking at him and thinking to myself, this is your argument? If you had an advisor or someone at least that was involved with your investments with you, they would have talked to you about the fact that you would have had this and counseled you on to maybe looking at some lower cost opportunities to sell, higher cost opportunities to sell and lower taxable investments and maybe structured it in a way that would have saved you a lot of money. And the amount of money that you lost on this, you're still sitting here telling me that anybody can do it. Not everyone has the ability to do that. Yes, sure, some of us have more aptitude for money and finance and the whole mathematics of it, but a lot of people don't. And I was just really taken aback, and it really reminded me of this whole idea of the simple set it and forget it concept that's being bantered around these days. This whole idea that, oh, all you have to do is put your money in an ETF and that's it. It's kind of like a diet, right? All you have to do is stop eating and you'll lose weight. But it's not that easy. As a matter of fact, it's very difficult because things happen along the way. Markets become volatile. Political issues come up. And there's a big question about where should you invest? What areas? Maybe not. Let's not get as sophisticated as looking at a stock or a particular sector. Let's just talk about big picture. Should I be overweight in the US, large cap, small cap? Should I be overweight or underweight in international? How much equity exposure should I have as opposed to fixed income? How much cash should I have? Should I have real estate in my portfolio? Should I have alternative investments in my portfolio? One of the things we recently did is that we had some excess cash in our global allocation portfolios. You can check that out. And all of this, by the way, what we do over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, because maybe you want to think about it's time to get an advisor. Maybe your advisor is just sitting on their hands doing nothing. And maybe you're saying, well, maybe we should start thinking about being a little bit more defensive or offensive in certain areas. Well, that's what we do with our various strategies. The global allocation strategy is one in which we had excess cash and we looked at that and said, you know, well, where do we want to be? We don't really want to be overweight right now in U.S. equities, particularly in the small cap value area. We don't want to be overweight in Europe due to a lot of the political instability and the questions of how things are going to play out over there. So we looked and found a really interesting alternative, we'll call it fund-to-funds type of mutual fund, that I think that it would be very difficult for the average investor to do the research on this and to understand what's going on and if it's a good investment for their portfolio or not, much less the idea of even thinking about this. So when I was, again, going back to talking with him about this, I said, well, have you thought about maybe the asset allocation? Oh, I just have a couple of ETFs and some stocks I've held forever and all this. And you know what? He's going to make the same mistake again in a different way. He's not going to probably make the mistake ever again of selling out his portfolio to, you know, put it into something else without thinking about the tax ramifications. Probably that's not going to happen. However, I would venture to say that he'll probably hold for too long in certain areas that have gone through their trough, through their peak, or maybe even not look into the whole range of investments that are available, because just simply having an ETF or an S&P 500 style of fund, that did well for a while. But I can take you back to a time, 1998. I remember it like it was yesterday. Value was sorely out of favor. Growth was really picking up. For the few years before that, we started to see a change in the difference between a value and a growth investment. Value being those companies that have higher dividends and good cash flow. You know, this the blue chips, if you will. Let's leave it at that for a quick definition. Versus growth, technology and healthcare, those companies that have higher PEs, less dividends, their cash has to, their revenues and earnings have to catch up to their PE ratio. And what happened in 1998 is that there was this big move into growth. And that lasted a couple of years. Value was very much out of favor. Everybody was just dumping their value and saying, I don't want to do this, where your value positioning was probably down 5 or 10% during those years, but growth was up 10%. Everybody ran to the growth, and by 2000, they were well situated. And what happened after that? Growth was unbelievably out of favor. They went from the frying pan into the fire. Or into the fryer. The frying pan into the fryer. That's what they did. And what happened here was that there was a double whammy for them. They were chasing and not realizing that everything cycles. And this is going to be the truest point of investing coming probably over the next number of years, is that everything cycles. The whole idea of just simply passive investing, it sounds great. It sounds easy. It sounds attainable and cheap for everybody. I am telling you, sure as I'm sitting here, that too will cycle. Just be aware of that and be ready. Look for the warning signs when and if they come. Let's keep on going on the discussion. We talked about crude oil. I mentioned at the top that, yeah, prices plunged. We saw the worst week in months for crude oil, closing the week at $49.83, down about 6% on the week, hit a low of $49.20. And why is this? When we have the Saudis and OPEC talking about extending the cuts for some time. Because we keep on seeing that even though they have these quote unquote cuts, production cuts that are already playing out and they're holding on to, we're finding that it's unfortunate that those production cuts are not doing really anything at all to reduce the overall inventories that are available. And it's a simple supply demand situation and calculation when it comes to oil. The more supply you have, the less demand you have, or any kind of variation of that same discussion, the lower the price is going to be. And while the Saudis are jawboning it as best as possible, I think a lot of people realize that they are just desperate at this point. They're desperate because they really have an inability to shape the total production and really have to bring down production a lot more than they've done in order to make a dent in the inventory builds that we've been seeing. And even though last week there was a bit of a drawdown on the weekly, the overall inventory levels still are exceptionally high. There was also that thing that we've talked about where there's a lot of people on the long side of this oil trade. As a matter of fact, a tremendous amount of speculators that are long oil at this point. And the same thing happened time and time again when we look at the euro on a currency basis. You look at various commodities. Every time we've seen that there is a mad dash to one side or the other, give it a little while, and any kind of news to the contrary of the opinion of whether they're short or long seems to have an incredible reaction because there's nobody left to go long anymore. Or to go short, depending on the circumstance. In this circumstance, though, players were just long, getting longer. Every dip they were buying. And what happened was that there was a realization that maybe this time to sell. And everybody just ran to the sell button. It took about 3 days to bring it down that much, but it was pretty ugly overall. Next week coming up, we have a lot of earnings. As a matter of fact, I think close to, I guess by the end of next week, about 40% of the S&P is going to have reported their earnings for this earnings season, for this quarter. We have Microsoft and Amazon, Google, just hundreds and hundreds of stocks, and that should cause for an interesting week. So let's think about next week for a second here. So here's what we have coming up. This is pretty interesting. We have the results of the French election and how that's going to shape the valuation of the euro and how that's going to play out with regard to the entire eurozone. Remember that there's a lot of the the sell side analysts who've been predicting and projecting. We talked about this with Ben Hunt, that there is an incredible amount of talk about why you want to be in Europe right now. And while that may play out, a lot of people have already put their money in and have allocated pretty well to Europe. And if there is any surprise in this first round of the election in France, it could be really very difficult on the euro, and it could be very difficult on the European stocks. We have that. We also have all these earnings coming in. We also have the promise of a tax reform announcement with a massive, major, unbelievable, incredible, glorious tax cut. The biggest ever. Biggest ever. On Wednesday. Now, already that has been challenged by the White House staff. This came out in a tweet. This came out in a comment last week by President Trump that by Wednesday or on Wednesday, there's going to be this gigantic announcement. Well, unfortunately, the problem is that the White House staff says we're going to give just basic principles of the tax ideas, which they've done before. We also have the end of the week, which is going to be very important, because by the end of the week, we have the end of the 100 days and the potential for a major showdown with regard to how the government is going to, quote unquote, stay open. The budget needs to be done. Funding needs to be done. And now it looks like there may be an inclusion of a requirement to have a $1.4 billion payment to start the wall, the Mexican border wall, involved and included in that bill. And that is going to cause a lot of problem. There'll be a lot of problems with that because a lot of people don't want to push that into the same funding measure. So it's going to be an interesting week, all told. There's a lot of things and a lot of moving parts of what's going to be happening this week, some economics that are important. And then, of course, we have to look at the following week, because we're back in to May at that point, and it's the first week of May, and that means that we have the jobs numbers coming out. So far, it doesn't look like there's going to be any major changes to the jobs environment and landscape at this point. But again, we're getting right back into that. It's coming very quickly. It just kind of doesn't stop. So with the first 100 days, this number that was put together, this arbitrary deadline that was first, I think it was by President Roosevelt in his aggressive plan to get things done in the first 100 days of his office, of his administration and presidency. A lot of presidents say they're going to do all this as well. And a lot of things haven't been done from where they were promised. Now you could chalk it up to a newbie being in office and not really understanding the total gridlock in Washington. You could do that if you'd like. There's no problem with that. I don't have a problem with that at all. But there's something to be said about that there is a lot more fighting and infighting within all parties with regard to many of the areas that are desirous of getting done, including tax reform and repatriation and infrastructure spending and the wall and the healthcare repeal and replace bill. So there's a lot of questions right now in terms of the quote unquote Trump trade, the trade that was all about industrials and infrastructure spend, the banks, the commodity related companies. So we've seen some of those really peel down lately. And then, of course, it's going to be a big issue about what companies think is going to be their future outlook, considering all the different things that they know about right now and what has really been a spectacular run on stock prices since, we'll call it, the latter part, fourth quarter of 2016 into the first part of this year. So whether or not the rubber is going to meet the road at this point and expectations will meet reality is going to be something that probably over the next few weeks is really going to come into focus. No longer can we have just a simple idea of, oh, we're going to have a great tax reduction, blank, blank percent cuts on corporations, blank, blank percent cut on individuals. We're going to pay for that through healthcare that we can't get through. And if we do get it through, it's going to be some chopped up, quick run, off the cuff plan. So there's a lot of, I think, questions that are really being raised right now with regard to that. You know, obviously, there is, you know, some good things that have happened also over the last few months and the first part of this new administration, new Congress, the Republicans in charge. But, generally speaking, I think there's a lot of anticipation. I talked about this since the beginning of the year in terms of markets, not politics, that markets are very easily swayed right now by the commentary, hopes, desires, and the outlook. Sooner or later, something's going to have to stick for markets to continue keeping as high as they are. We did see the S&P 500 drop below its 50-day moving average last week, the first time in a while. Again, keeping under that level, it did not have the ability to get above it, even though we did see a nice rally mid part of the week. So I think this is going to be one of those where resistance is support, support is resistance. Prior support is now current resistance on the 50-day moving average. And again, we could see a lot of trials and tribulations of markets and market participants in this week in particular, trying to sort through all the different things that we've thrown at them from a geopolitical standpoint as well as from an earnings standpoint. So kind of gives you a little bit of a taste of what's going on there. And if you have more questions on things, you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and ask me a question by going over to the Ask Andrew section of The Disciplined Investor and just pop it in a question. We'll answer it at that point and either put it on the air or answer you directly. All right, let's square it up here, finish off the first part of our little discussion and get right into a discussion with Damian Lupo. We're here today with Damian Lupo from TotalControlFinancial.com. It's an interesting story that Damian's going to hopefully shed some light on about his past, what he does, some fascinating discussion about the idea of reinvention. So, Damian, let's just get right to it.
All right, Andrew, let's do it.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you've done and how kind of you've come to where you are today.
Well, I think if you really sum it up in one key thing, it's that I'm a disruptor. I'm disrupting everything that's quote unquote normal. I mean, I literally look at things and I'm always thinking, what's a better way? What's something different? And I hate the word no. It actually forces me into a space of creation, which is fascinating because when I look back, growing up, I heard no from my parents telling me we can't afford things. And I went, you know what? I'm going to figure out how to make this happen. And it started off when I was 11 and it just kept going. And every time somebody said, don't do that, I said, yeah, but why not? It's not hurting anybody and it's solving a problem. And so after I got thrown out of college for starting a bookstore that was putting the bookstore out of business, I realized I was not meant to be on the normal path. And it just kept happening in different ways, whether it was insurance or real estate or venture capital or setting up restaurants. I mean, it was a whole litany of things that I was doing and everything had to do with disrupting the status quo. And I think that's really why I'm here, to challenge the legacy systems and the legacy thinking. And that has everything to do with what you see in Reinvented Life and my story, where I had to disrupt myself just to get square and build a new foundation after I had gone off a cliff in 2008.
So basically you have a history of pissing people off. Is that what you're telling me?
I do. People that are in like closed box thinking. Yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely piss people off. They don't like to hear what I say because it really challenges the truths that we think are so true that really maybe not so true, that could be false. And I don't think anybody really likes being told that they're wrong.
Yeah, I hear you. So let's you know, this whole concept of reinvention. So first of all, I kind of want to start off with that because we're going to get into some of the business topics here, but you know, you lead people and your desire is to get people to reinvent themselves, and not only personally and all, but financially. So what is this whole, how do you describe this reinvention?
The way that I look at reinvention, it's really shifting us from a place of pointing fingers to taking responsibility. And once we shift that, so a lot of times people come in and they'll reach out and they'll say, what should I invest in? Or what business should I do? And I look back and I answer, I have no idea because I don't know who you are. And what we have to do is we really first have to ask ourselves, do we own our lives? And that was the big shift I made in 2008, where I really was doing a lot of blaming and victiming. And I think a lot of people are really used to that. And it's normalized because we see it everywhere. And so we tend to blend into it. And once we shift into a place of self-responsibility, we can exchange our mind for a new one. And that really changes our financial life. Because if we're blaming people or we're blaming the economy or we're blaming President Trump or Obama, we don't have any control over anything and we're stuck. Once we say it's all me, then we can change something.
So it's taking personal responsibility for your actual outcomes and actions.
Everything. Yeah. And this is hard for people because they go, yeah, but I didn't cause that hurricane. I didn't have somebody attack me. And I get that. And what we're talking about is taking responsibility for how you interpret those things in addition to the things that have happened to you. So it's a shift into just owning your life.
you know, it's interesting because my wife and I, we get talking all that, and she says, that hurt my feelings, what you said. I said, well, you know, it's interesting because, and it is a little bit different from what you're saying, but I said, well, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to say something that was, you know, so harsh. I really came at it in a way that was, I thought, being, you know, nice and helpful. And it's the idea of how you see what is coming into you, how you define the information, how you, as you mentioned, interpret the information, and then what you do with it. And I've always thought about this. You know, it's like, you know, I could see the situation now. Oh, I feel bad that's going on. Well, who said you have to feel bad? It's you. You have the power over all of this to do what you want. And listen, we're not perfect. All of us will get caught up in this from time to time, right? You know,
it's funny because I'm listening to you and I'm cringing thinking about these conversations I've had with people in relationships in the past where some girlfriend's feelings are hurt and I go, I'm sorry you feel that way. Nobody wants to hear you say you're sorry they feel that way. It's right. Like, oh, really? You're not right. Sorry for anything you did? Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I hope it didn't sound like that when you were doing it.
No, it probably did, but it's a matter of perspective. I mean, at least you probably heard it that way. My point, though, is it's, you know, if we have certain ideals and ideas, and let's kind of bridge this over for a second in the world of business and finance. If, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I went, you know, I love this stock. This stock is such a great stock. Meanwhile, the stock goes to hell in a handbasket, right? And, you know, you're saying, well, everybody else is wrong. And I always say, and I haven't told you this, but my listeners hear me say this, that if you're in a room of 100 people and you're the only one that's right out of all those 100 people, you're wrong. It, you know, the fact of the matter is, and you may not believe entirely this, I should say that with you, if you're a disruptor and you want to change the common belief of some things, but the reality is that you have to be able to at least go with what would work. And unless you want to change the entire system, which is a possibility, right? Well, you're going to have to give in to the fact that your opinion is not the only opinion.
I think that's true. I think that there's something about being wrong and being okay with being wrong. The difference is when you're in doubt and there's a shift. If you're in a room with 100 people, you may be wrong, but if you're not in doubt, there's something that still stands out. There's something that allows you to move forward on your own. And that's the big difference. And you can be early and you're still right, but you're really wrong. So it's funny because people do this. My friend Peter Schiff says this. He's been saying things for years and he's early and people go, you're wrong. And he's like, no, I'm not. But he ends up being early. And it does happen. You just have to be certain. And if you're certain, you can still be wrong, but it doesn't change your certainty.
Yeah, I've had Peter on my show a few times and some people may say he's early. Some people may say he's a broken clock. I'm just saying, you know, he may be early, but he may be just the fact that cycles happen. And if you call something like gold spiking long enough, it's eventually going to do it in some degree, whether it's off the bottom or whether it's, you know, or there's going to be a market correction or crash or the dollar. I mean, he's been big on, you know, saying that the dollar is going to go to zero and trying to prove it in several different ways. But let's go over to the whole word, which I found this interesting. So by the way, so Damien sent me three books and he sent me red markers, which by the way, thanks for the markers. And this really cool, I don't know, there's a card. Is your business card is like this see-through thing, but it's kind of cool. But you sent me three books. You got the guide to the QRP, which we're going to talk about in a second. Reinvent Your Life, How Two Friends Move from Conflict and Pain to Consciousness and Purpose. Very much spiritual and kind of, I would say, Eastern religional in a way, and at least how that sounds. And The Quick and Dirty Guide to Gold and Silver, the top 21 most asked questions answered in 30 minutes. But I want to talk to you about something that you have in your book here. And one of the things that you talk about is the word retirement and how it makes you cringe and it gets you upset, the whole concept of this word. What's that about?
Okay, let's just be honest here. Who wants to be looked at like they're an old tired horse and taken out into the back in a field and shot in the head? I mean, that's what we're talking about with retirement. It was about taking the things that had worn out and putting them out to pasture. And we have to stop thinking about ourselves like we're old farm animals or machinery that gets buried in the dirt and start asking the question, what are we really trying to get to? We're trying to get to a place where we actually enjoy our lives and we're free to do things because we've got financial certainty. That's what retirement really is. And the truth is we can find that type of that life earlier if we start engaging in our life and stop looking at this gold watch. The reason that I am so adamantly against retirement, the idea of it, is that I believe that the universe conspires with us when we're on purpose. And when you get to a point in your life where you say, I'm done, I'm retired, we've all seen this. Somebody says, I'm retired, and they're literally dead in 3 years, which is the average of how long it takes for the American male to die after they retire. It's because if you stop contributing, and that's what we're here for, we're here to contribute and connect. If you stop retiring or you stop connecting and contributing, the universe says you're taking up space. You're taking up oxygen. So, what retirement is all about is that you're saying you're retired and then you're going to be dead in 3 years. That's what happens. I mean, in America, the average male is dead 3 years after they retire. They get the gold watch and they're not tiptoeing. They're like sprinting to their grave. And it's this is just stats, man.
I'm never retiring. I'm not retiring.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad somebody heard this.
That's it. No sprint to the grave for me.
No, I mean, it breaks my heart because I've got some friends that I used to watch full of life and making Corvettes and things at the GM proving grounds. And I watched when the retirement thing hit, and I've just watched this degradation of my friend just going really into a place where he's talking about how he can't golf anymore and his next surgery. And I'm looking at him going, you're not even going to be around in a couple of years. And that kills me. It's because he stopped contributing. He stopped connecting. He's literally taking up space and oxygen. And really, the universe isn't on his side anymore. It's saying, you're taking up space. We're going to go find something better.
But at the same time, we have to then think of another word. Because I'll tell you something. You know, I was at an event last night, and I asked some people, what do you do? We talk on meeting people, learning a little bit more about them. What do you do? And they said, well, we're retired. And they were kind of young, by the way. So I was a little bit taken aback. But, one of the worst things you can hear from somebody, it just seems obnoxious when you say, what are you doing? Independently wealthy. Or I trade my own account. Or, I guess if they say I do charity work, I could live with that. But somehow the word I'm retired, what else can they say? Maybe you're saying it's not really what you say, it's but how you actually embark upon that next part of your life, whereas you don't necessarily have to work. You're not saying people have to work. You're saying that you have to do something, which is maybe a hobby, an enjoyment, charitable exercise, enterprises, maybe even continuing to be an entrepreneur later in your life. I mean, you're not saying the whole idea of retirement from the classical standpoint of, okay, I work, I save a lot of money. Now I don't have to do that particular job anymore. You're saying just don't get on the rocker with a lemonade and sit there with a pipe in your mouth and kind of watch the days just fade away.
So what I'm saying is that you've got to take retirement out of your vocabulary. The moment you say that, you're giving yourself a death sentence. I mean, you've got to stop saying it. And if you're done with your job, if you've got a pension, that just means you're in phase two. So if somebody asks you what you do, great, I'm in phase two. What are you doing now? I'm creating it. I mean, that's something that's empowering.
Yeah, I'm in phase two of my life. I'm in phase one and a half. I'm 99% done with phase one.
That's right. So, cool. What's phase two? Retirement. Oh, great. So what does that mean? You're going to go traveling. You got your lemonade. You're sitting in a rocker and you're waiting.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Interesting. Well, all right. So then the concept of the other concept I want to get to, some of the ways that we can get to phase two. what is phase three? Is there a phase three? Is that just?
I think they're going to be phase 50. I think it depends on how many different ways you want to reinvent yourself. I mean, it's up to you how many different versions of you there are.
So this is this is part one of my life and this is part two. That's a good, get to second part of my life. Well, that kind of connotes a little bit of age, I guess. I'm 50. I'm on two thirds done. About two thirds done. What is this concept of red and green arrows related to wealth and poverty that you talk about?
I think this is actually, it's funny. This is kind of related to retirement because people pay attention to these arrows a lot more as they get older. And these arrows had come back to a conversation I had with a client of mine where she was watching the markets and she called me and she said, I want to fix my money thing. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, here's the thing. I'm watching the news every day and I see these arrows and they talk about the financial markets and there's a green arrow and the markets went up and I feel richer and I feel like I can go do things. But I'm also aware that it could be a red arrow day tomorrow and I'm going to feel poorer. And I feel like I'm on this damn roller coaster every day. And I'm always wondering, am I going to be richer or poorer? And I have no control. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And she said, I want to get rid of these things. I hate these arrows. And so it was really a function of her taking control and starting to invest in things and learn about things that she could control, that she wasn't being fed to death with and that no longer had her focusing or paying attention to the financial report because it didn't matter anymore when she was out of that system.
It's interesting because we talk about how, some of these financial channels are, or maybe all of them are sensational. They're looking for the thing. They say the same thing over and over. They have the same people on over and over. Best way to watch these things, first of all, if you happen to do so, is with the mute button on. And so that you just see if there's information that you need to see for some reason, because it may be something that comes around. But, you know, to have someone who is not in the business looking at the various tape, you know, let me just kind of, you're maybe a good person to talk about this with. You know, this whole idea of our economy here in the U.S., the big concern that there's a lack of productivity recently, where we're seeing some wage growth and we're seeing that there's you know, more jobs being added and all that, right? So you have all these jobs being added, GDP is not really expanding. We have lack of productivity. I keep on wondering, what's the deal with the lack of productivity? So the first thing is I noticed that, you know, you see all these people that are like during their job, whatever their job is that is not related to finance, they're involved in all these other things that are not related to their job, number one. So they're not 100% dedicated to success in what they're doing. The second thing is they're all on their phones all day long. And by the way, when I say them, I'm including myself to a degree. You know, you're on your phone, you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're, you know, text messaging somebody and all that. Is this kind of taking, it may not be the right thing to talk about, but does this seem to be something that is causing a lot of people to fail or not get to phase two?
Yeah, there's a thing called FOMO and there's a squirrel hunting epidemic that's going on. I mean, we've got all these bings and dings and twings and all this stuff that's happening nonstop, and we're paying attention to it. And it's because we've got FOMO. We've got this fear of missing out, which is totally pulling us away from something that I love called the one thing that Gary Keller wrote about in his book, The One Thing. We have 4,000 things and we're trying to multitask, and it's disrupting us primarily because we're not totally into anything. We're all over the place. And that's I don't know if it's productivity that the problem. It's the problem that we don't have this confidence that we should be focusing on a thing. We're afraid that we should be focusing on everything because we don't want to miss that the thing that, and everybody's afraid of that. So it screws with our time and it takes us away from.
What is with this whole FOMO? Has this always been there? And I really never noticed it as much. I mean, I know what it is, fear of missing out. But is it you know, everybody's so panicked? It happens in the market every day too. This is the market. The whole point of the market of it shooting up at 9:30 a.m. is also because people want to say, oh, if it's going to go up, I want to be in there. And if it's not, I'll get out of it. But I want to be there. I have to be there because, you know, it would make my day. But what is this whole obsession with people having to have the thing now? Is it because of Facebook? Is it because everybody else is showing their pictures of them jumping off this, you know, great bridge and bungee jumping over here and going to Tahiti and on the beach? You know, all these different Photoshopped slash, we'll call it postcard style videos that are being presented all over the place. So people are just like, oh man, I want that too.
Andrew, you're talking about people paying attention to other people's highlight reels on Facebook. And that's what we're comparing our lives to somebody's highlight reels, like just the best things, the moment this quarter or this year that was really cool. And all we see is those highlights. And then we go, my life sucks.
Yeah, my life's
terrible.
And
then we're chasing the next thing. No, but that's what we're doing. And we didn't have this 10 years ago. There was no highlight reels. We actually connected with people. We heard the ups and the downs. Now all we see is all this amazingness. We see the snap that goes to $40 billion. We see all this stuff and everything looks like it happened in 4 seconds. And so we go, you know what? I better be doing the same thing. I better have that best life every single moment. And it's freaking, it's breaking us. I mean, it's crazy.
I agree with that, by the way. I really do think it's messing with our productivity. It's messing with our creativity too. In terms of, you know, and this is where reality TV really became the biggest problem, right? You know, the housewives. You really think that that's reality TV or scripted? You know, it's more gently scripted TV, not reality TV. And I always thought that guy, you know, that guy Bear who does the survival stuff.
Yeah,
you know, he's out in the wilderness alone, right? And he's doing, you know, there's probably cameramen there that are taping him as so he's probably got some other people there. Like, he can't be doing all the camera work.
You know? Yeah, so, this is not reality TV. This is sensationalism. This is us being entertained. And the fact, it's like the word retirement. If we say it to ourselves, if we say reality TV and we get in with these things and we don't realize that we're just literally escaping, then all of a sudden we start looking at that like that's real life. And we start comparing our lives to those things. And then all of a sudden everything gets very confusing because nothing makes sense anymore because that's all BS.
Yeah. Well, with Damian Lupo, we're going to get into, I know we're talking about some kind of outside the box stuff today, but I thought he would be a good person to talk about because he's got such a nice background in some of this and this whole idea of reinvention, which can happen any time to any person. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with every once in a while sitting back and kind of just, you know, seeing what's going on and taking in what you're doing. But every once in a while, it probably makes a lot of sense to say, you know, what can I do to make myself better? And that comes to finances. That comes to the whole area of investing in your life and making sure that you have what you need to throughout phase one into phase two, because you're not going to retire, are you? No, we're going to phase two. So what's the story with this EQRP plan? This is you actually wrote a whole book on this, this topic of an EQRP, QRP qualified retirement plan, E for, I guess, easy or electronic.
We make it easy. Everybody? It is electronic. It's you know what? I love it. I love how you're just playing into the acronym. That's awesome. It's empowered. And I'm going to take everything you said and I'm adding it to our marketing.
No problem. No fee. Thank you. I can keep going, but go ahead. So tell me about this. What is the story with this thing?
So the EQRP is essentially a self-directed 401k. It's a retirement vehicle. It stands for Qualified Retirement Plan. And it's a retirement vehicle that gives you all the control. It takes all the fees out of Wall Street's hands and it puts all those fees back in your pocket, puts your retirement money in your checkbook, and you go invest the way you want to. It puts you in the driver's seat of your financial future instead of being passive and hoping and smoking a lot of hopium, thinking it's all going to work out maybe someday in your life.
Dude, pass the hopium. So now when we're talking about this self-directed and this 401k that I can do now, let's get a few things clear. Not everybody can do this.
No, some people can't balance a checkbook, so they're disqualified.
Right. Well, aside from that, though, if you work for somebody, you get W-2 income only, you can't do this. And you're covered under a 401k plan at your current employer, you can't do this.
If you don't have a side hustle, you're right. Right. If you don't have some type of self-employment thing, you're stuck.
So this is basically for people that are either in their own business or they have a secondary business or they have some other income from a business source of types that they can then utilize. Now, what this is also saying, let me give you the backdoor to this, by the way, people. So what this is saying is, and you can correct me on this, but if you have a job and you want to do something to possibly supercharge your retirement or your phase two of your life, what you can do is figure out a way to maybe open up a side business or to, you know, keep what you're doing. And if it's legal and it's not against the rules of your current employer, maybe find a way to get other income that you can actually deposit to a self-directed 401k plan like this. And it has a lot greater availability for the amount of money you can put into it. And you can actually have a much greater amount of phase two income. I don't say retirement income, phase two income in the future. Is that pretty much sum it up?
Yeah. What's fascinating about what the options are here. You can, if you've got your job and your 401k money is stuck there and you really can't do anything, if you have an idea in your mind that you want to be an investor, that could actually become your income. You could be out there doing some real estate thing if you liked real estate, and you could actually create income around that thing that's your investing stuff. That income is created so that you can invest it in your own private retirement plan. So there's ways of doing this. The question is, do you really want it?
Right.
You want to be in the driver's seat. That's the bigger question.
I would assume that most people would want to, if they could, have a, well, how many people don't, or many people, let me just say this differently. From everybody that I've talked to in life and all that, yes, there are all those people that want to be in a cog in the, you know, in the whole process, right? They want to be part of a structured program because it's very scary going out on your own necessarily. But we're really talking about the potential for ancillary income that is business related that will qualify for this EQRP or this self-directed 401k plan. So what do you do with people? Give me some examples of what you do with people who are in a situation where, they have a current job, they have a 401k and all that. And what kinds of things? You said real estate, you know, I guess there's a whole bunch of different options that they can do it's like a second job to then qualify for this.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most common thing where people are saying, I want to do real estate. And here's why. It's not so they can be the next reality star flipping houses. I think that's the stupidest plan ever if that's going to be your entire investment strategy, because all it is another job. But what happens is people start realizing that real estate is the simplest thing they can get their arms around and create cash flow, which is a lot different than the idea of just hoping that your property or your investments are going to rise in value. That's a stupid plan, because then it's all speculation and you're a casino, or you're at least playing the casino. So if we start looking at options, that's typically the first one. And the second one we see is precious metals. And it's simply because it's real and it can't be manipulated. So people like the idea of something that cannot be twisted and turned with smoke and mirrors. And they shift over into that space. That's typically where people go when they want to take control, is those two things.
So again, let's just talk about now, if you do qualify, if you're in your own business, if you're in your own situation, you may have things like an IRA currently, you may have a simple plan possibly, you may have some other kinds of, maybe a SEP, for example. Mm-hmm. Where is this better than, let's say, a SEP?
Well, what this does is it literally gives you the ability to have the control completely in your hands, and you can go and you can, so all the different things you can do, you can borrow money out of it anytime you want. You can write yourself a check for 50 grand. You need a check for anything. You don't have to go to a bank and qualify. You get to invest in things on your timeline. You don't need somebody else telling you you can or can't do things. You can contribute your $54,000 a year. The list goes on and on and all these things because you're the trustee and the administrator. I mean, bottom line is you're in control, and there's nothing else that gives you that type of control with that much ability to invest in things. And here's the problem with like with supercharged IRAs and things. If you're involved in real estate, we all know that real estate is a great thing to use debt for if you do good investments because you've got the leverage feature. If you use debt with an IRA, you're taxed on the income even though it's in this tax deferred vehicle. That's a big problem. That doesn't happen with the EQRP. You can literally use debt and all of the profits stay and they're not taxed. That can easily change your returns by hundreds of percent over the next 10, 20 years. So
Let me stop. I have a question. How do you use debt if it is a qualified plan? So where do you situate the debt?
Good question. It's like any other real estate investment that you would do where you buy something and your retirement plan has some cash. Instead of writing a check for your entire investment, you write basically you're using your money for a down payment, and then you take out a mortgage for part of it, and it's non-recourse, so you can't sign on it. It's non-recourse debt. And so now you've got leverage. You've got way more real estate than you could buy if you just use the cash in your account.
So are you using the cash in your account for, let's say, cash part of the transaction, or yes. are you lending that cash out? I would assume you have to have an arm's length transaction on that, right?
You're using your cash. There's a couple ways to do it. If your retirement plan is going to own the real estate, your retirement plan's cash is basically going to be the equity piece. It's going to be the down payment, if you will, and then you're going to take a mortgage out. You could also be the party that gave the mortgage for somebody else's deal. You could lend your money out and be the bank. So you've got all these different options. It's a lot more. It's literally 10 times as many options as you have with IRAs and SEPs and things. You're very limited in those plans.
But there is a little bit more paperwork. There's a $5,500 that you have to file, or you have to have a plan administrator, and there's some cost involved for the benefit of these various features.
Yeah, there's the $5,500 form. If you have $250,000 or more in assets, you've got to file that thing. If you don't even have to file it. So that form usually takes 15, 20 minutes. If you do it yourself, an accountant can do it. Charges you a couple $100, whatever it is. So that's really all that it takes if you've got a company like us that are doing the back office type of stuff. And that's part of what we take care of for people for compliance. And it's fixed. It's a $300 a year thing. So there's no mystery around what's going to happen. How many fees am I being charged? Like with custodians, it's very clean. It's very transparent. And I think that that's what's missing with most people's investing. It's too fuzzy and it's too foggy.
Yeah. Well, clearly. All right. Well, I would encourage my listeners to go check out TotalControlFinancial.com. Of course, the various books, A Quick and Dirty Guide to Gold and Silver, Reinvented Life, and Total Control Financial Guide to the QRP. You can get those at any fine bookstore, which is Amazon.
Exactly.
Maybe there's somewhere else. I don't know. Or maybe coming soon to a BJ's warehouse. I heard that Amazon may be looking into buying them, which I don't really get that, but it would be interesting from a distribution point, I guess. Damien, I appreciate you coming on today.
Andrew, I appreciate you having me. Thanks for the time.
All right, speak to you. So, strike the word retirement from your vocabulary. Think about the idea of phases of your life, because seemingly it's a better way to look at this whole thing, and do what you can all throughout your life to enhance your circumstance so that when you get to the next part, the component, the phase of your life, you're well set. You can check out all the information on Damien and links to his website, TotalControlFinancial.com, over on the DisciplinedInvestor.com. So you can check that out over there. So before we got to the guest, we were just talking about a variety of things with regard to next week, this week coming up, and what's going to happen with the potential for the fallout or excitement over the French elections. I'm still thinking that the big issue, there's only one part. There's going to be whatever happens in this runoff election is going to be another election to get the final answer of who is going to be the actual leader of France. And if Le Pen gets in, there is a big concern that she will want to leave the Eurozone, and that would be the end of this experiment, this whole European situation. I don't know if it's going to get that far. I don't know. These days, who knows what's going to happen, what people are, you know, loving, not loving, what they think is great for their economy, what's not. Just look what's going on with Brexit. Although last week we did see a snap election was called by Theresa May, the current Prime Minister of England. And there's a potential that they're going to have some other kind of a commentary or election that may possibly reverse some of the exit strategies by Great Britain, UK, on this whole thing, and maybe slice out part of, I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting situation here. And I really don't want to handicap what's going to happen either way, because you really don't know. But the pound did surge on that. And there was some concern about what would happen if there was another election and she didn't get back in, and if Brexit was going to be somewhat reversed. Anyway, thanks for joining me. We're going to have a great guest from Junior Achievement on next week. Jack Kousikowski is coming to join us. Thanks again. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.